May it please the court. There are two issues before the court today. The first is whether incriminating statements were obtained from Mr. Salinas in violation of Miranda versus Arizona on August 2nd, 2011. And the second is whether 2 months later, when police came to his home with an arrest warrant, whether the ensuing warrantless search of his home for drugs violated the Fourth Amendment. With the court's permission, I'd like to take these out of order because the second issue is slightly more complicated than the first. On October 11th, 2011, 7 to 8 officers, a team, surrounded Mr. Salinas' apartment. They went to his door, they knocked for about 5 minutes, they woke him up, it was in the morning. He came to the door, and without any further anything, they entered his home. There were no facts to justify a protective sweep under the Supreme Court's case in Bowie. The police had no basis.
You said that, but this was, they were had cause to believe that this was a drug, he was part of a drug trafficking operation.
I don't think that was known at the time. What they were arresting him for were false statements to a federal agent. He had no criminal history at this point prior to August 2nd.
But the false statements were the thing with the phone and all that.
Correct.
Okay, and the phone had to do with the drug trafficking.
It did, but there was no testimony that they were concerned for their safety in any way. There has to be articulable facts. There was no testimony about them being concerned for their safety or even worried that there were other people in the apartment. The fact that they suspect that he might be connected to Antonio Ortiz or any drug trafficking organization is nowhere in the record.
He'd already had the encounter with the phone. They knew he had some connection with a suspected drug dealer.
It has to be more than just some connection, Your Honor. They have to articulate facts that they needed to enter the apartment to assure their safety. They didn't need to do that. They were able to effectuate the arrest at the door. He was at the door. They don't get to go in and search when their safety is not compromised, and there's been no testimony from the officer that they had specific facts that at that time concerned it. Certainly, the court looks at the entire record, but there has to be some testimony. There has to be some Bowie facts to warrant the entry into the home. In Bowie, there was an arrest for, I believe it was armed robbery. It's quite different than the facts here. This is someone with...
No, the problem is these drug trafficking, you know, labyrinths, they tend to have weapons involved. I mean, we encounter that a lot. And so to me, you've got the search, they knock on the door, is anybody here? No, you can search it. I mean, that all happened fairly quickly.
It did.
And so they had at least some degree of permission to come in. Once they're in, then a brief sweep, to me, seems very consistent with you've got a potentially drug trafficking circumstance.
Let me unpack.
It's a reasonable inference, isn't it?
It's not, Your Honor. I would direct the court to my citation, Menchaca Castruita. The fact that there are drugs involved does not permit the officers to enter the home
But he'd already said you can search it. I mean,
they entered the home and then they asked. That's very important. The officer asked
you. Well, I follow what you mean by enter. You know, so we knock on the door, he opens it. They didn't push him away and go barging in.
They stepped in. He was at the door.
They stepped in. Okay, so you've got, you know, you open a door, somebody steps in. Do you have anyone here? No, you can search it. That all happened fairly, like, in the entryway. Then they start making their sweep. The question then becomes, you know, do they go beyond any potential, you know, consent with the duffel bag and all? That's a different question. I don't find this so obviously they just come barging in, shove him down, start, you know, digging through all the drawers with no cause whatsoever.
Well, they have to have more to search than they did. They have to have some reason to enter. They could have effected the arrest right there. And the search incident to arrest, which is the judge kind of mushed the search incident to arrest and the protective sweep into one phrase, but really neither justifies an entry the way that I know it happened quickly, but that doesn't mean they get to do it.
Well, I'm still, though, I feel like we're parsing this doorstep very finely. I mean, you know, you might have a citizen allege, well, you shouldn't have been arresting me in front of all my neighbors. I mean, so you've got you know,
there's no Fourth
Amendment.
The door
open and whether they're like a couple steps into the door. They're legitimately there to arrest them, and this isn't just randomly going door to door trying to accost citizens. They're there with an arrest warrant. I mean, this is parsing it very finely. How many feet into the doorway were they before they had this interchange about the searching it?
Unclear from the record, Your Honor.
Okay, so I mean, I get the impression they were at the door. He opens it. If they stepped in a foot or so, I just don't think that suddenly renders this whole thing a violation of the Fourth Amendment. I mean,
well,
there's a certain amount of give and take in somebody opening a door and so on.
Well, a couple things, Your Honor. One, there's no Fourth Amendment right not to be arrested in front of your neighbors. There is a Fourth Amendment right not to have the police inside your home. The Fourth Amendment recognizes that barrier as being very important. It's not a trivial matter.
No, I realize that, go ahead.
They had a warrant to arrest him.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's what I was going to say. They're not just randomly going down the street knocking on doors, hoping to be able to barge their way in and look for drugs.
I understand. But the arrest warrant is not a search warrant. And if he's at the door, they don't need to push him back into his house to be in his house.
Did they push him back?
He was at the door. How did they get in otherwise? That's a reasonable inference.
Okay. But we don't draw the inferences against the judge's finding. We draw inferences in favor of the judge's findings, just as inferential that he stepped back a little kind of like this and they took that as an invitation to walk in. I mean, we can make both inferences from this record.
Well, there's no indication that he stepped back, and the officers both testified that they stepped in. So it probably is not.
There's no testimony about some sort of shove or whatever.
No.
So he was blocking the doorway. For them to step in, they would have had to shove him. So the only reasonable inference is that he did step back. And when somebody steps back, having opened the door, I don't find it amazing or a Fourth Amendment violation to step in briefly, not all the way gallivanting through the house.
Well, Your Honor, because we don't know whether there was a shove and we don't know whether he stepped back and we don't know how far they entered, it just says they entered and that's all we know. It was more than was necessary to effect the arrest, and that is the entry that is permitted. There was no testimony about concerns for safety.
It seems to me like you're asking us to draw inferences against what the judge ruled from this question of entering, and we've just come up with about five different ways it could have entered, some of which would have been problematic and some not. So why wouldn't we draw the inference that supports the judge's ruling, which is, I think, what we're supposed to do?
Of course you're supposed to draw the inference that supports the judge's ruling, but the government has to have a way to get them in there permissibly. And
well, I thought we had case law saying if you have an arrest warrant, you are permitted to enter to the extent necessary to arrest. You are permitted to enter. And then once they got in there, when they were arresting him, they saw evidence of drugs in plain view.
Why were they
not entitled to do a protective sweep, not open the duffel bag, but a protective sweep to make sure no weapons or other people were hiding in the immediate vicinity?
Let's unpack the order in which these things happened, because I think it's important to answer your question. When they enter, they don't immediately see drugs. They didn't, according to the warrant affidavit, they didn't see drugs until they opened the sealed container that had drugs in it. It was a zipped duffel bag. So
I thought they saw powder residue somewhere.
Interestingly, if you look at the sworn statement that supports obtaining the warrant, it says that they did not see the dust residue until they'd already searched the whole apartment rather carefully, found the cocaine in the duffel bag, called the DEA, brought them in. That is not a cursory search. A full search was done, and only then, according to the sworn statement of the officer to the magistrate judge, did they see the cocaine dust. So it wasn't until they'd already violated the Fourth Amendment here by exceeding the scope of any consent, even assuming it was validly given, even assuming the officers couldn't step in the first place, they did not get there until well beyond the violation. So it wasn't as though they stepped in, saw the cocaine dust, it was all over, and it was inevitable that these items would have been discovered. In terms of the voluntariness of consent, they'd already stepped in. He's under arrest. And the government they mentioned it in their brief, but they didn't put on any evidence about the voluntariness, and the district court didn't make any findings. And it is their burden to show both the existence of consent and the validity of that consent. And the district court said that the officers may have thought they had consent to do more than just search for people, but They exceeded that by opening the duffel bag. And that really, that in terms of the warrant was the key factor. So it's impossible to say under this court's decision in Grosshider that the absence of that cocaine, which they took time to field test, did not have any effect on the magistrate's issuance of the warrant. So if they had done the cursory search just for people, they would not have come up with the cocaine dust. They would not have come up with the cocaine in the duffel bag.
But once they entered, and then consent given after entering, and you find this other evidence, doesn't that moot your argument on...
Find what evidence, Your Honor?
The evidence of drugs.
No, because if they had conducted what would have been permitted, assuming the consent was valid, and I'm not agreeing that it is, but assuming the consent is valid, they would have had the ability to search cursorily for people, not in a duffel bag, not...
But was the consent limited to say that,
yes,
well, we don't want you to, you know, look for anything but people?
Well, the consent is not limited in that way, but it is limited. What the question was, I believe it was Officer Askew, asked Mr. Salinas, is anybody else in there? And Mr. Salinas responded, no, you can search it. And by it, the apartment, search for people in response to the question, are there people there? That is not a...
Officer be in good faith if they, given that consent to search for other people, search for evidence of other people?
In a duffel bag?
Evidence of identification.
No,
you know,
it's just the presence.
Rental receipts.
That kind of cursory search is for officer safety, not the presence of other people living there, but whether there actually are people there. And there was no indication that there were other people there. The officers had searched Mr. Salinas's prior apartment as well as this apartment as part of the investigation on August 2nd, 2011. So there's no indication that there were other people there. There's no reason to believe there were other people there. The fact that there were drugs involved does not justify entering to do a protective sweep. Even if he consented, it was just to search for people, not cocaine dust and field testing and opening zipped containers and such. I don't have much time. If I could, I'd like to turn to the custody issue on August 2nd. I think it's important to look at the entire totality.
The aptly named recent U.S. Supreme Court case of Salinas v. Texas have anything to do, I mean, and not, obviously it's not the same Salinas, but it's a case about Miranda. Anything helpful from that?
I'm straining, Your Honor. I don't believe so, but I'd like the chance to take a look at it specifically with that question in mind. On August 2nd, the officers were conducting a search for a fugitive based on the GPS location of the fugitive's phone. They tracked the phone to Mr. Salinas' apartment complex, and more specifically to his building. And there were 8 cars, officers everywhere. I believe it was Officer Garza saw Mr. Salinas first. They noticed that the dot associated with the phone was moving. It was on the move, the phone was on the move, and Mr. Salinas was on the move. They, as the government pointed out, pinpointed him. Officer Garza went to him, spoke to him for a minute, unclear exactly about what. Mr. Garza didn't testify. Officer Garza then radioed Officer Askew to come over. And Askew's getting information in his ear about where the dot is. It's right near him. It's right there. They've pinpointed Mr. Salinas. And Mr. Salinas denies knowing the fugitive, Antonio Ortiz. Askew knows that he's probably lying. He's being nervous and evasive. And it is then that the phone rings, and Officer Askew recognizes the number on the phone as one of the most called on the fugitive's phone. Mr. Salinas makes some more statements about who's the caller. Officer Askew's not believing him. And importantly, he told Mr. Salinas that Mr. Salinas knew more than he was saying and that lying to a federal agent is a federal offense. And it's those things together that meant that he was not free to leave. As Officer Askew himself testified, he was handcuffs away from being arrested at this point. He was not going anywhere, and he made incriminating statements at that time. He had no ability to leave. The officers had his phone. The officers had the fugitive's phone. They knew they were connected. And I think the case of Benga Benga is very much on point here. Once the officers married the luggage claim stub with the marijuana-containing suitcase, Ms. Bangabango was not free to leave, and that's similar to the case here.
All right. Thank you. You've saved time for rebuttal. The case that I was referencing, Salinas versus Texas, is 12-246 from the U.S. Supreme Court. No doubt you've read it, but that's fine. Okay. Ms. O'Malley?
May it please the Court. My name is Terry Lee O'Malley, and I represent the United States of America in this criminal case.
Can you help us a little bit with this doorway? Because I had not visualized it the way Ms. Landau is portraying it. It's like he comes, opens the door, and they kind of shove past him, and now they're in the home and so on and so forth. Can you tell us your spin on the knock on the door, he finally opens it, now what?
Your Honor, there's no evidence at all that they shoved their way in. And as you noticed earlier, the standard here is that the inferences are drawn in favor of the district court's finding.
So how did they get in the door? I mean, she's saying they must have shoved him. You're saying they must not have shoved him? I mean, I don't know.
I'm saying the evidence is not clear, but there is absolutely no testimony that they shoved him. And, in fact, that's not really consistent with his giving them consent to search for whatever it is he was giving them consent to search for, that they would have shoved him and entered his apartment without authority.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's suppose he opens the door, sees the officers, he steps back just like in surprise. So now there's a foot into the doorway that is not filled with any human at that point. Are they just free to walk across that threshold? And she's saying no, even if he isn't being shoved, that they can't just walk in just because there's free space.
Yes, Your Honor. They are, in fact, authorized to enter his home at this time because they have a warrant for his arrest. Now, there's no evidence that they were in any way rude to him, but they could enter his home. In fact, they could have entered his home on the basis of their belief that he was in there while they were knocking on the door waiting for him to answer it, which was a considerable amount of time.
Of course, certainly, in effect, the arrest, if the defendant stepped back, as the scenario was just presented, to effect the arrest, they got to go somewhere to get him. If he's in the house, they go in the house.
Yes, Your Honor, that is absolutely right. They go in the house, and the evidence that that we were referring to earlier, the drug residue, the drug paraphernalia, was in plain view the moment they stepped in.
She's saying the affidavit says to the contrary.
Your Honor, the judge made it very clear at the very end of Deputy Askew's testimony that he had, in fact, testified that he saw the drug residue and the drug paraphernalia immediately upon entering.
When seeking the search warrant? She's saying the affidavit contained the search warrant.
No, Your Honor.
It seemed like the duffel bag is the basis for the search warrant.
No, Your Honor. The drug residue, the drug paraphernalia, I don't remember the exact paragraph. I'm not going to guess, but it wasn't in the list of things that were taken directly from the officer's report, which is what Ms. Landau was referring to.
Okay.
And the judge made it clear that while it might not have been in the report, the timing was such that, and in fact, Deputy Askew testified that once they saw that, they called Bartels immediately, and they conveyed to him the items that were in view and that were included in the search warrant.
Was it drug residue, suspected drug residue, and paraphernalia, or just paraphernalia like scales or?
No, Your Honor. I believe it specifically said that there was drug residue on the floor and on the kitchen counter or the kitchen table. I think it was the kitchen counter.
Is the record clear in terms of, I'm familiar with shotgun houses in New Orleans where you could see clear to the back of the house from the front. Does the record show any of that they could see this, the stuff on the floor from the front where they entered?
Yes, Your Honor. The record is clear that the kitchen area was to the right of the door. There was no obstructed
the front door.
From the front door, yes, Your Honor. And so all they had to do was look to their right, and they could see all of the items that were included in the search warrant above and beyond the cocaine that was found in the duffel bag. The duffel bag that all of the officers testified had the logo of Ferrari, which was associated with Los Zetas. Your Honor.
Okay, but I mean, you'll agree they really shouldn't have searched the duffel bag.
Your Honor, in a perfect world, they shouldn't have searched the duffel bag.
Well, in an imperfect one, I'm struggling to see a good argument other than the inevitable discovery argument that they protected. But as far as why you would think you could just based on, yeah, you know, you can search, that means you can just start unzipping every compartment in the whole place.
Your Honor, I think there is a reasonable argument for the officers at the time. I mean, it's easy for us to look back, and the judge actually did say, why did they do that? But they did believe that they had consent, and it wasn't clear at all that the consent was just.
If you say, is anybody here, and they go, no, you can search, I don't know that I'd be looking for a person in a duffel bag.
No, Your Honor.
A small person or a very big duffel bag. And so I might take from that that I can start kind of looking under, you know, where a person might be hiding, a person's concealed who could be a threat to the officer. I mean, I get that. But the duffel bag seems kind of pushing the envelope a bit on the consent to search for people.
Your Honor, as we, as the government stated in the brief, this isn't actually a relevant issue because of inevitable discovery. But I do think that the case law is clear that there does have to be some sort of specificity in a consent in order to say that it is limited. So I think that this case is probably closer to Mendoza-Gonzalez than the recent Supreme Court case, Cotton, which Ms. Landau filed in a 28J. In that case, he said, yes, you can search it. And when they actually did start searching his truck for the location where the drugs were hidden, he didn't stop them. And in fact, Judge Jack was very clear in this case that she asked, did he say, was he watching when you opened that duffel bag? And the officer said, yes, he was. And did he tell you you could not look there? No, he didn't. And that doesn't.
Cotton was our case, right? Not Supreme Court.
Yes, ma'am. I apologize for that. I was thinking about the Salinas case, actually.
Do you see any? I mean, other than it's just funny to me that there was two names, exact same, dealing with Miranda within a few weeks of each other that I was focusing on. I don't know that there's a lot of relevance there because in that case there was no question about, they all conceded that Mr. Salinas was not in custody.
Yes, Your
Honor.
So
then the question was just, after they start talking to him and then he suddenly clams up, is that, can they use that against him? And we don't have that here. I just wanted to make sure, since it's, you know, when the U.S. Supreme Court speaks on a topic that's directly related to something I'm dealing with, then I always want to make sure I didn't miss something in what they said.
Yes, Your Honor. I think it's clear that it doesn't apply here for the very reason that you said, which is that everyone conceded that he was not in custody. There was no question about that.
Although it was weird because he was down at the station also. He seemed to be more in custody than this Mr. Salinas, but since they conceded it there, we can't.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay, fair enough.
Your Honor,
what do you want to say now that we're on that, about the phone and the whole, the officer, well, he's not free to leave, but he, I don't know. So the officer thinks he's not free to leave, but you're arguing that he wasn't in custody. So it's a fine line there.
It's a fine line. However, in this case, I think it's very clear that he was not in custody. The only reason that this is even appearing to be debatable is because appellant is applying the wrong standard. It is not whether he's free to leave. That is not the standard. The standard for in custody for Miranda is whether his freedom of movement was restrained to the degree associated with formal arrest. And that was not the case until his actual arrest. Now, the fact that they held his cell phone has been held as a factor in determining whether or not he was seized. However, there has never been a case that says when an officer is holding your cell phone, especially when you've given it to him voluntarily, that he is therefore in custody. That step has never been taken.
Well, the thing that struck me is he gave it to them voluntarily. Is there any evidence he asked for it back?
No, Your Honor.
That would seem to be if I hand it, they said, can I see your phone? Sure, here. Okay, now I got to go. Can I have my phone back? And then if they say, well, no, then we would have to debate whether having somebody holding onto your cell phone prevents you from leaving.
Yes, Your Honor. That's absolutely, I would say, the case here. And it would have been reasonable for him to have said, I'm moving, I have a lot to do, I'm sorry I can't help you, before even the phone rang, before the phone was even in the officer's hands, he could have stopped the conversation at any point, and he didn't. The officers asked for his phone, they didn't demand it, they didn't take it from his person, they didn't search it in any manner until they had a search warrant. He handed it to them. And in fact, he had pulled it out of his pocket to answer the phone call that he later admitted was Ortiz, the fugitive that the deputy marshal was searching for. And he did not at any point, even after that, after the officer had recognized the phone number, which there is nothing in the record to indicate that the officer actually conveyed initially at the first moment, conveyed to Mr. Salinas that he recognized that phone number. So while it could at some point have developed into a seizure under the Fourth Amendment, there is no evidence, no credible evidence at all, that he was ever restrained in a way that a reasonable person would believe was the degree associated with formal arrest.
Didn't I hear your opponent say something to the effect that, Officer Agent Askew felt as if he was restrained? That the defendant, that Salinas was restrained?
No, he never said that he was restrained. He said that in his mind he was not free to leave. However, that was never conveyed to Mr. Salinas until he was arrested, or at least that is the way it appears in the record.
But isn't that important? I mean, you're drawing a distinction between, as you said earlier, a fine line. Does it make a difference? Restraint, custody?
If he was restrained, and he was restrained in a manner that, pardon?
Restraint doesn't mean that you just have to have handcuffs on.
No, but there's no evidence that he was, in fact, restrained in any manner. There were no weapons drawn. There were two officers questioning him. Apparently, the way back to his apartment was available to him at any moment, and he didn't try to walk away. There was no limitation on his movements at all. No one put a hand on Mr. Salinas until the point that they arrested him. The interview was also open to the public. This was not taking place even inside Mr. Salinas' apartment. This was taking place out in the open, and this is a very relevant factor in this court's jurisprudence. The questioning was not sustained over a long period of time. All of the officers' requests were polite. They were not commanding. There was nothing, in short, of an inherently compelling pressure during this conversation up until the fact that Salinas was actually arrested. So the government's position is that at no point prior to his actual arrest was he, in fact, in custody. Your Honor, just to return briefly to the second issue here, as I believe I said earlier, the agents had the authority to enter his home. They had the permission to search, certainly for people. Even a cursory search that would be consistent with a protective sweep or search incident to arrest would have revealed the drug residue, the drug paraphernalia, the drug ledger, the numerous items in his home that were associated with Los Zetas. Now, the consent to search and the scope of the consent to search is a closer matter, but it isn't relevant here because it would have been discovered. The drugs in the duffel bag would have been discovered inevitably. From the moment the arresting officer saw that drug residue and the paraphernalia associated with it, with the razor, with the scales, the ledger, from that moment forward, they had sufficient evidence to obtain the search warrant. They didn't need the evidence of the cocaine in the duffel bag, and that certainly would have been found, as the district court recognized. They found the cocaine that was hidden in the laundry room. They certainly would have found the cocaine in the Ferrari duffel bag.
Okay. Thank you.
If Your Honor have no further questions, I will cede my time.
Okay.
The government respectfully requests this court to affirm Salinas' conviction and sentence.
All right. Ms. Landa, your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to begin, I'm not, when I say that the affidavit to the search, supporting the search warrant, indicated that there was no cocaine residue found until DEA agent Bartels came, I'm not talking about a police report. I'm talking about the affidavit to
Can
the
tell
search.
Tell us where that is in the record.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Government's Exhibit 1.
Okay.
And that's important because while certain key details may be omitted from a police report, which is not under oath and which is not used to present to a neutral magistrate a basis for searching somebody's residence, this affidavit was. So either they saw the cocaine dust and the affidavit is wrong, or the most reasonable conclusion to draw is that it was just misremembered what order things happened. It did happen quickly. To move on to the...
Was there testimony at a hearing that they immediately saw the residue? Was there oral testimony?
I don't know about the word immediately. They did mention they saw the residue. It's not clear to me upon reading it exactly what order in which they saw the things. They did see razor blades. They did see ledgers pretty immediately. I'm not sure exactly from the testimony at what point they saw the residue. But the affidavit, which was made at the time, said that it was the DEA agent who was called in after the more than cursory search had been done. It was only then that that residue was discovered, field tested, et cetera.
Going back to the cell phone issue, the government argues in their brief that even if your client were in custody at the time, shortly after the phones were handed over, there was enough evidence to support his conviction.
I'm glad you asked that, Your Honor. There's not, because the confession happened. That's the confession. They couldn't prove that he had not spoken to him and, you know, didn't know who he was, hadn't spoken to him, didn't know his whereabouts. They couldn't prove that just by his possession of this person's phone. There's no evidence.
When was the question asked, do you know Ortiz?
That was one of the first questions he asked. Agent Garza asked.
Before the phone was turned over or after?
Before.
So he lied about knowing Ortiz before the phone was turned over.
He did lie, but the proof of that lie did not come until after. And there can't just be a link, as the government suggests, is sufficient. It has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. It has to be over.
Then the phone rings, and the officer recognizes this as one of the numbers on Ortiz's call list.
Correct.
So if you just stop there, couldn't the government later prove that that Salinas did know Ortiz and lied when asked point blank, do you know him? And then they should prove that, yes, he did know him, and he, in fact, had Ortiz's cell phone in his possession. Isn't that enough?
It's not enough, Your Honor. Not beyond a reasonable doubt. I get that it's probable cause to believe that he's lying, certainly, but it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. And it has to be something where the district court need not have relied on it at all to find him guilty. And that is not this case. And I think the cases I cited in my reply brief are much closer to the facts of this case. Without the confession, the government's evidence is pretty weak. It's not beyond a reasonable doubt. If I could just briefly move on to the inevitable discovery issue, the government has to show not just that they could have got a warrant, maybe, they have to show, one, a reasonable probability that the contested evidence would have been discovered by lawful means, and second, that the government was actively pursuing an alternate line of investigation. I don't know what the alternate line of investigation is in this case. The government really didn't put on any evidence of inevitable discovery. They just kind of said it like a talisman, and that was it. So they haven't met their burden, and it is their burden to show that the evidence would have inevitably been discovered, not just that they were standing in the apartment. And especially with respect to the cocaine dust perhaps not being as plain as it might have appeared from the judge's findings. And it's not enough that the officers felt that they believed they had consent. This case is very similar to Cotton, where, and Cotton very clearly says that when the question is circumscribed, is there anyone in there? The answer, you can search it, is circumscribed by that question. I think that the case the government is citing was a general request. Can we search it? Where it is not limited at all. This is not that case. This is not Mendoza-Lopez. This is Cotton. So for all the reasons I have articulated, we request that the court reverse Mr. Salinas's convictions.
All right. Thank you. This case will be